Thank you so much for tuning in. You're listening to the Best in Tech on the Tech Central Podcast Network. And with me today, I'm very excited to have somebody who's kind of changed my life about the way I think about money. And not because she's a financial advisor.
I'm definitely not a financial. Look at my face. Would anyone give this face a license?
But it is because you've just figured out the awesome way of explaining, demystifying, looking at money. I'm, of course, talking about Sam Beck-Bessinger. How's it? How are you doing? Welcome on the Best in Tech.
Oh, thanks so much. That's very kind.
You've just launched your book, Manage Your Money Like a F***ing Grown-Up. And I know Duncan's going to hate me for that because he doesn't like, I'm going to have to beep it out. But we'll start chatting about the book right after this. Welcome back. How's it, Sam? You launched your book. How's it been going?
Very good. I think that South Africans have really wanted this book, which is kind of why I wrote it, right? I've spent a lot of the last sort of 5-10 years interviewing people about money management, specifically young people. Mm. And the thing that everyone sort of said to me is, it's ridiculous that there is no class in school about this thing, you know?
It is crazy.
In life, there is no class. Where do we learn about this? I think the problem is we end up learning mostly from advertising, which is a terrible place
Bad
to learn
practices.
Anything.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've been really just thrilled. Like, I've put it out in the world, and the response has been really great, specifically amongst young people, and that's kind of who I really care about.
So your expertise in money didn't come just overnight or reading a few books. I mean, you've been venturing down this path for a long time, starting with freelance journalism, obviously, where all the good people come from, obviously. What brought you to the finance side of things, the fintech?
Well, I think the sad thing is that when I was in my early 20s, I was truly abysmally bad with money. And that's kind of really what triggered all of this. I entered my mid-20s deep, deep down a debt spiral that I thought that I was never going to be able to claw my way out of. And I found myself really in that trapped position where I was making all of my decisions based on, oh, am I allowed to say bad words?
Yeah,
I mean, you already said the bad word.
Yeah, we set the prison now.
You know, every decision that I'm going to have to make for the rest of my life is going to have to be about how do I get enough money to get myself out of this terrible spiral. Mm. And I realized that actually the irony here was that by not understanding the system, this was trapping me more and having to, you know, make money more important in my life than I wanted
scary,
it to
man.
Be.
It's scary, man.
So scary. So I went on a mission, basically. And, you know, kind of coming a background as a writer, I go out into the world and I learn things. Mm. And then I like to explain those things to other people. That's what I love doing. So I've really spent nearly 10 years now, actually, very slowly building up a knowledge about finances. I've worked for banks. I've worked for investment companies. I've worked for all the bad guys. And
you saw what the beast was like on the inside.
Exactly.
Nice.
And the really interesting thing that I discovered is that money is not actually as complicated as they would have you believe. It's not this weird mystical thing invented by quants in dark basements. Actually, the principles of investing money, making it grow, not that complicated.
I wish somebody told me that when I was a kid, because
right?
Honestly, it is daunting. I mean, you've basically raised all the points that I think many people in today's really consumer-driven society has got a problem with. We're falling foul to these banks and these institutions who want to give us money, give us credit, and that's basically how most people get into problems, and then they have to start thinking about money.
Absolutely, yeah.
So what is the thing that you've seen among – you've done a lot of research when you did the book, a lot of interviews with a lot of people throughout Africa and over the world. What is the one theme that you've seen running through with people who have money issues?
I think people don't often – I guess two things. I definitely think that South Africans specifically, but people in the middle class throughout the world, are not terrified enough of consumer debt. That's like short-term debt. We just are not nearly cognizant enough of how much debt costs us. And that is universal, but particularly bad in South Africa, where we have 10 million people with impaired credit records. Like, you just can't actually do what is normal in our society because that's not healthy. You get trapped, and I've heard really heartbreaking stories about people's lives being taken over by debt spirals, really.
Oh, I've been there. I mean, when you don't, when you're in a facing a position, and as a freelancer, it happens, because when projects don't happen and jobs don't come along, you go through those spurts, and at some points it can be daunting and it takes over your life. It's all consuming.
Absolutely.
And you lose focus of the things that you need to be focusing on.
So that's the kind of the one side of it. But I think the other really more inspiring thing that, you know, I've learned and seen is that we also don't realize how much potential we have and how much we're actually likely to earn over our lifetimes. So an anecdote or a little sum that I like to throw out there and talk about a lot is, if you imagine a 25-year-old who's earning 10,000 rand a month, right? It's not a huge amount of money, pretty normal middle-class salary for a 25-year-old. If that person only gets a 7% inflation increase plus the odd promotion over their whole lifetime, that person earns 19 million rand over their life. That's before they start investing. That's before they take advantage of common interest. It's a lot of money, right? So actually, I think we don't realize how many choices we really have. Like, there's all these things that we think of big one day maybe dreams of, like, and then we kind of think and just assume these are out of our grasp because, you know, we're just trying to get through the here and now. But the reality is that so many of us are just sort of spending money on things that, you know, we're just spending mindlessly. These things are not really our biggest, truest, most ambitious dreams. And when you stop and think for a moment how much money is actually going to flow into your hands over your lifetime, all the things you could do with it if you were a bit more intentional, it's actually really inspiring.
That's a very important lesson. And geeks, people that are into tech and geeks like ourselves, we often get tempted by too much technology. I mean, a cell phone, a smartphone these days costs upwards of 15,000 rand.
Yep.
Sign yourself into a contract. Might not feel like much, but 700 rand, 800 rand, 900 rand over a period of 2 years, it's a lot of money.
It's that debt thing again, right? You kind of, you look at the monthly price tag and you're like, oh yeah, I can totally afford 700 rand a month. And you don't, but if someone said, would you buy this gadget for 20,000 rand? You'd say absolutely not. But if you can't afford that, then you can't afford it broken down. But I think far worse than cell phones are cars, really. Like, cars are a money bonfire. And we need cars, specifically living in Joburg. Like, people need cars to get around and do their business. But
not certain type of car. I know. You don't need to spend 800,000 rand on an SUV that you never take off road.
I know.
It seems silly, actually.
And look, I do think that there are some people out there who are like true petrol heads. And really the thing that makes them happy in their lives is having these amazing machines. Mm. And those people should absolutely be spending all the money on cars.
Look, if you can afford it. I mean, all fairness to you. You know, you got the money, you can do it. But if you're tempted into paying off your car again, a lot of people spend 8,000-9,000 rand on a car that they can't afford.
And then you start in like balloon payments. So I think this is the thing with cars is actually, I think everyone needs to do the math for themselves. There's a calculator on my huge, giant, sprawling spreadsheet on my website.
Which is fantastic. I advise everybody to go.
Please go look at it. Just do the calculation on exactly how much your car is going to cost you over the remaining lifetime of its loan. Just do that sum. And then be okay with it if you're okay with it. But at least do the math and know how much that car is actually going to cost you.
I've paid off my car recently. I've seen those figures, and that's why I haven't traded in on a new car. And I'm perfectly happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've come to realize this, the older you get, you know, things, kind of priorities change as well. You're not chasing everybody else's, you're not chasing kind of, you don't want to be following the Joneses anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to get the
latest.
Well,
you are the Joneses.
Damn it. Yeah. That is a problem.
Although I think a lot of my friends who became tech donors also did it because it's the best way to get all the good gadgets without having to pay for them.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why some of us, it's a good way of getting hold of the stuff. But still, you know, long-term technology, you also have to ask a question. Tech being increasing in power so often.
Mm.
We get new technology brought out every year.
Mm.
Do you really want to be investing that much money in something that's going to be obsolete in 12
months?
Totally.
I think it's really challenging notions of ownership in our society, right? Like, I really think we are going to move to more of a rental-based society around a number of things where you can access the really cool gadgets when you need them, but do you really need to own all of these things and then pay the cost of the giant house with the huge garage that increasingly is a storage space for all of the things you've bought?
And I mean, autonomous vehicles is that thing, right? We know what Uber is doing around the world with their self-driving cars. Tesla is experimenting with these type of things. we are moving then. I think then people's perception will shift. Then you'll have the pure petrolheads owning cars because they want to drive it for the pure thrill of driving it.
Yeah.
But for the rest of us, I'd be happy not to.
But even then, I mean, like, I think we're just in this weird change moment, right, where society hasn't quite changed over. And so there's a lot of waste right now. Mm. But I think, you know, all of us suffer from the hedonic treadmill anyway. So the more access we have to something, actually, the less joy it brings us anyway. So the joy of not owning things means that everything that you interact with actually makes you happier, weirdly enough. You know, there's that thing about how if you do the, you know, when we're making decision about, like, should I spend my money on a kiff weekend to Derbs, or should I spend my money on a sensible Currycraft couch, right? Seems like the sensible thing to spend your money on is the Currycraft couch because you use it every single day. But it turns out that actually your brain blanks any pleasure from the Currycraft couch after like 2 days anyway. And over your lifetime, science says this, the thing that makes you happy is experiences.
It's the real memories. It's the stuff that you're going to remember when you are sitting on a couch on a rainy day reminiscing about the days you were spending outside.
Totally.
It's a crazy trap that we are caught in.
Mm.
What is the one advice? I mean, people need to go read the book because there's incredible amounts of information there. But what is the one thing you'd recommend people to start with?
I think the first
thing... buying the book. Obviously. That's step one.
Book.
Step two is...
Sign up for the Facebook group. No, I'm kidding. I think the first thing is that changing your money behavior is like changing any kind of behavior. It's like deciding you're going to become healthy. It's like just like trying to do more exercise or anything. Quitting smoking. I quit smoking. It's the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my goddamn life. Changing your behavior is hard, and it all comes down to the feels, honestly. It's seldom about knowing what to do. It's usually about getting to the point where you are emotionally ready to confront the thing, unfortunately. So the big piece of advice that I have for most people who, when you think you're maybe ready, but you're not quite there, but you want to get ready, is to just start actually tracking your spending. So I, for a long time, worked on an amazing local app called 22/7. It's completely free. It's, you know, I'm biased. I think it's the best thing since sliced bread. But my first piece of advice to most people is go and download that app and don't try to change your financial behavior for the first couple of months. Just start tracking it and just make time with yourself every week to go and sit and look at your spending and start to understand it. Because, you know, we kind of end up in this ostrich mode of, like, even when you go and draw cash from the ATM, you like quickly crumple up the slip.
I don't even ask for the slip anymore. I say, don't ask that. I'm saving trees. Don't give me that slip.
Exactly. So the first thing I think is just getting comfortable, just understanding yourself and looking at yourself. And only from that point can you then start making any changes when you know where is your money actually going right now.
And I'm sure we'll be shocked to know that most of our money goes down the drain. Mm-hmm. Spending it, you know, contactless payment is great, but it takes your mind away from the process of signing for something. You're looking at a slip and signing for it.
Yeah.
You're tapping it. You forget about it. 20 Rand, 50 Rand, it adds up.
And we've got stupid monkey brains. We're not computers. We're not good at, like, assessing long-term value of things. We're just, our brains evolved to forage for berries and pump other monkeys in the jungle. Like, you know.
We just have better technology now.
Exactly. So I think just understanding it. I think the upside of the fact that a lot of the money that we spend is quite mindless means that when you are now ready to actually start wrangling your spending, people are like, oh, I don't want to budget because I don't want to have to give up my lovely Avo toast or whatever. The good news is normally, actually, you don't have to give up your Avo toast if it's making you happy. Normally, the best places to start trimming the fat is really to trim the fat, the things that you are spending money on, which probably is adding very little to your life, like downgrading your fancy car. That's one big action you can do that you can reap the benefits from for the rest of your life. You know, that costs you no pain.
Yeah, I think when you're looking at the luxury stuff, you can get away with, I mean, we talk about food and those kind of things that we all love to enjoy. I mean, you just need to shop smarter too. I think as a consumer, we need to change our behavior in the way we buy things because we need to buy stuff.
Yeah.
But we don't need to buy everything.
Yeah.
Don't need to buy the latest graphics card unless you're a pro gamer potentially. You really don't need to buy the latest CPU. You know, we should. I was joking about technology earlier, but tech lasts longer in many ways. I mean, a MacBook has been notoriously is known for lasting longer than most other computers just because it's a closed system, right? Yeah. You can use them for much longer than any other
Those
Windows-based
Those Lenovo machines. ThinkPads that run like a truck for 20 years.
Yeah, those are still around. Yeah, of course. Technology is a problem in some ways, right? But we've got the tools now to help us. You said 22/7 is something we've downloaded. I've used it before. I actually don't have it on my phone now. So I need to, this is homework for everybody to go and download that. And then work on your Excel sheet to customize your spending. Now, we were joking a little bit earlier about your Excel spreadsheet and the amount of work that went into that. Can you give us some insights behind like how this thing came to be? You obviously got resources from a lot of other places.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess I'm a giant nerd. I spend a lot of my life in Google Sheets. I find it just the most incredible tool. We were also talking earlier about how – so now what I do is I run a fintech consultancy, which means a lot of what I try and do is I help very early stage startups create the first prototype of their product in the space. And increasingly what we use as a prototyping tool for financial things is Google Sheets. Like the amount of flexibility that you have, you know, the kind
tools
of
tools are powerful. It's free, right?
Exactly. It's free. It's so open and so flexible. You can plug in most APIs. You can write these really complex scripts. So my spreadsheet is not that complicated compared to many of the others I've worked on.
It's easier to follow, in my opinion. I've used a few of them, and the way that you lay it out as well with the color blocks, and follow the whole thing. Well done.
Thank you. I guess I believe it's really important that most people get more comfortable looking at their money. And unfortunately, sometimes a little bit of extra homework helps you do that. So while apps and tools like 22/7, another big international one that's really popular is something called YNAB. Those are great because they take away a lot of your homework. But the sad thing is that you actually need to keep a little bit of homework in the system because you need to have that moment of reflection. So I find for myself sitting, I call it my big monthly money review. It's a date that I have with myself and my partner just after payday. We sit down, we make pour some wine, you make it very nice, and we sit there and we fill in our spreadsheets, you know.
That's such a clever way of doing it because you're doing it with somebody else. It's a shitty job. You don't want to do it, but you're kind of making a thing out of it.
Yeah.
But it's important. You have to manage that.
Exactly.
Do you think we are far away from a place in time where AI will manage your money for you? So when I get to a shop and I want to buy this thing, my card is going to say, no, you said you want to save some cash.
Yeah.
You're not going to let it happen. Do you think we're going to get to, I mean, AI is obviously going to be able to do it.
Totally. So actually, this was the feature that I rolled out at 27. I was most proud of. Do we need to pause so we can cut that?
Okay. No, it's fine.
Sorry.
It's just a little doggy outside jumping on the window waiting to be part of the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. He's so excited about money management. The feature that I worked on in 22/7 that I'm most proud of was sort of the most baby basic version of a money nudge system is what we called it. And what it did is, so what 22/7 does, if you don't know, is it lets you aggregate all of your accounts, investments, debts, whatever, from wherever. It scrapes all of your data, stores it, categorizes things automatically, and then shows you sort of, you know,
does
exactly. Yeah. But what we wanted to do is we wanted to try and automate the analysis step. So go a step further and to crunch some of the numbers. So we built a lot of these quite complex scripts where we would identify people who were doing certain things, like they were way overspending on a certain category against their peers. We could see that they didn't have any automated savings. We'd also look for stuff like people who are saving but also have high interest debt, which isn't really the most logical thing to be doing.
Sure.
And things like that.
You want to get rid of the debt first and then focus on
exactly. And we try to sort of show people these really small natural language hints and tips. Mm. Say, you know, did you think about that? Maybe if you did this, then blah, blah, blah. It was super fun to work on, but what we realized is that actually, I don't think it's the solution because I think some of the analysis layer definitely, and we definitely dreamed of a world where, you know, the next logical step would be now tap to approve, you know, just changing everything, setting up the payments. The reality is that most of our financial behavior still comes down to day-to-day decisions that you are going to make every day. So I think there's a lot more of our money universe we should be trying to get to the point where we can automate. And I think it's the important stuff. I think we should be automating how investments work. I think we should be automating, you know, making those decisions of, I have this extra 100 rand. Should this go to paying off a debt? And if so, which debt? Or should it go into savings? And if so, which saving? Mm. I think those things we should increasingly automate.
Decision-making stuff about, you know, the
Spending, I don't know if we're ever going to be able to fully automate those things because they come down to incredibly personal, incredibly emotional decisions. And it's about people's priorities as well. And it turns out humans are all quite different and they have different priorities. And it's quite difficult for an AI to make decisions on your behalf about what your priorities should be.
What if they get clever enough? What if we have AI that's human?
See, the concern, of course, is will it be a benign AI or will it be an AI run by Facebook who wants to influence you to, you know, buy certain things?
It'll have to be a personal AI that I guess, learns your behavior from a very early age. And learns what you... Look, this is the future, obviously, that we've all seen on Black Mirror and those kind of shows.
Mm.
But it's not, I guess it's not something that, it's not impossible.
Sure.
There's probably going to be a service out there that you can sign up for that does it. But like you said, it's probably not going to be the best way of managing your money.
Yeah.
You still want to own that. You still want to, otherwise, I mean, what's the point of trying to manage money if you're just not thinking about it, because you're still going to try and want to spend as much as what you can.
Yeah.
You don't know, you don't have money.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, sort of speculating about the future of personal financial management is a really interesting question, but I think even more interesting for me is speculating about the way that the very structure of the economy is going to change and therefore what it will mean to sort of be an individual economic agent within that system. We've got huge pressures of change, both in terms of, you know, just global inequality just becoming unbearably, you know, getting to the point where it seems like it can't continue in the way it has been. And simultaneously, we've got these like huge experiments at decentralization, and we've got, you know, all the blockchain experiments, and we've got, the kind of also very problematic things like the rise of populism again, and xenophobia. So, you know, like when I talk to young people about their, you know, saving for their retirement, more than one of them have said to me, oh, but by the time I retire, we will be a socialist state. So it's like, so what's the point?
Yeah, we can't be thinking like that, that's for sure. Now, one of the big things we've got coming up in South Africa on an economic basis is the increase in VAT.
Yeah.
How should we be worried about that from a consumer point of view? I mean, what should we be keeping an eye out for? Or is it just, again, a matter of just saving more because this is going to hit our bottom line?
Absolutely. So I think that is a particularly visible change. It's one that people are certainly going to feel, specifically the poorest of the poor. Mm. They have zero-rated some essential food items, but if you look at what the items have been zero-rated, some of those decisions are also quite weird and haven't been revisited for a long time. So it's definitely going to have an impact. I think the truth, though, is that consumer inflation is a much broader thing. It's not always so visible as the VAT increase, but it's been happening for years.
Things don't generally come down once they go up.
Absolutely.
Right?
And I think, structurally, South Africa's economy has been struggling for a number of years, for a number of reasons, some of them, around the drought and kind of the knock-on effect on farmers and food prices, some of it, political, the downgrade, all of these sort of things that we read about in the news. It can take a long time before we can really feel the impact in our pockets. Mm. But all of these complexities do ultimately lead to the rise in prices. The VAT hike definitely is one very noticeable one. But the truth is that prices have been rising for a long time in quite a sort of scary way. This is one of the reasons that I think more South Africans need to be careful about relying on their bank savings accounts. A lot of people, when they start saving money, they just keep it in the bank. Typically you can get an interest rate of around 4 to 5.5% sort of on the high end. Like if you really have a lot of money saved with the bank, F&B I think is the highest, it's 7.3 or 7.5. Oh, okay. That's a money market fund essentially that works like a savings account. But generally people are getting more around 4 to 5. And inflation over the last several years has been closer to 6, which means that every year you're getting poorer. It's like you're keeping your money under your mattress and your little kleptomaniac tokoloshes are sort of, stealing it every night.
Well, that's not good news, actually. So what is the next step from there? I mean, work better with your money and find something to do with your money that's going to earn you better interest.
Exactly. Invest it. That's really the solution. And invest it. And, I talk in the book a lot about investing. It's not that complicated. It's not scary. It's something you can start doing with 200 Rand a month. It's really not out of most people's reach. I also talk in the book about the glory of the global ETF as a product. It's this one incredibly simple investment product. It's so diversified. It means that you're putting your money into Kigali and into Tesla and into places all around the world, big companies all around the world. and you're really helping, you're participating in the global economy, not just the local economy.
That's interesting.
And it's so easy to invest in. It's a simple thing you can open online in 5 minutes.
I was just going to say, is it an online service? That sounds like something I can sign up for. Put your credit card details in and subscribe for 12 months or something.
No, exactly. So there's actually one of the exciting things about the sort of fintech space in South Africa at the moment is it's just zooming. Like there are new projects popping up all the time. In the investment space, at the moment, I've been so excited by the work that Easy Equities is doing. CoreShares is another one. These are both services. They're websites. You can log in. They have apps as well. Eufeka with them, which you can just do on your phone. And then there you go. You have the world's stock markets at your fingertips, literally. We're almost getting to the point where it's as easy to invest $300 in buying Tesla shares as it is to invest R300 buying a Tesla branded shirt. I don't know, what could you buy with $300?
Yeah, Tesla branded shirt is probably going to cost you like $1,000.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of licensing and import duties on that.
There's this fun website called it's called Invested Instead. And it takes various gadgets that you could have bought over the last 20 years. So it's like if instead of buying the original iPod, you'd bought Apple shares worth the same amount as the original iPod.
That's going to be the worst website you can visit.
Yeah, exactly. Like Intel stocks 10 years ago or whatever, Nvidia shares, instead of that new graphics card.
Buying stocks in these tech companies always seems so exciting.
Mm.
I mean, you were talking about this online service you can do, but is there a way to easily do it? And should you try and buy stock directly? Even if it's just for fun. I'm not talking about serious big investments here.
I think it is worthwhile for anyone who can afford to park a small amount of their whole portfolio for fun investments. Mm. For investments that are things that you really care about, things that you kind of know a little bit about, and are in individual shares. Now, I don't think that that's actually the best way for most people to invest most of their money all, because I think that most people are terrible at picking stocks and shouldn't even try, which is why I'm a big proponent of passive investing. And so is Warren Buffett, by the way, and he's much smarter than I am. So you should listen to him, and much richer. Don't listen to me. Listen to Warren Buffett. So I think generally people should have like 90% of their portfolio in a passive investment, which is low fees and just really tracks market returns. But I do think that you should have some play money with investing. And I think that's what keeps you engaged and keeps you emotionally excited about it. And with that, totally, go buy some Nvidia shares. Again, you can do this on Easy Equities. If you do have a foreign bank account, there are a number of really cool apps that let you do this. Like Get Stocks is a great one, but you have to have a US bank account, unfortunately. But yeah, definitely go buy some of, like, instead of buying the gadgets, go buy some of the shares in the company that makes the gadget. It's a great way to just like make yourself feel like investing is exciting.
And part of it, and you can kind of track, and it is fun. I've played around with it a little bit. I'm not an expert at all.
Now, so go buy some of that Bitcoin. It's fine. But just do not put all your money in Bitcoin.
Bitcoin's way too expensive. And we promise you won't be talking about Bitcoin because that's a deep, dark,
it's a rabbit hole.
My brain gets confused after 10 minutes. I don't really like that.
Yeah.
So technology, you've been a long-time geek.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of tech have you seen around that's really interested you?
Ooh.
Stuff that you would be spending your money on.
Oh, man. I have a real soft spot for some of the new drones that are coming out. I don't own a drone. I don't think I ever will. But they're just quite fun. I saw one. I'm trying to remember what it's called. I went to the launch a couple of weeks ago.
Mavic Air.
Yes, the Mavic Air, exactly. And it does this boomerang thing where it like shoots off into the air and then comes back. And what I love the most about it is it follows your hand. So you can put your hand out and then it like locks in. And it feels like taming a dragon. Like, you know, you make a soul bond with the with the drone, and then you like lift it into the air. So that was super fun. It's not a gadget, but I've also been a lifelong obsessive about Sid Meier's Civilization.
Oh, yeah.
And I have, because I was trying to finish a book and like, you know, launch a business over the last year, I was not allowing myself to buy Civ 6. And a week ago, I finally caved and I installed it, and my life is gone now. I have no life. I had a life. Don't have a life anymore.
Gaming is terrible like that. It sucks you in. But at least you've done the work. You kind of deserve some downtime. No, don't you think so?
I mean, I do think, like, you know, those simulation games increasingly are just so amazing. Like, some of the work projects that I've been doing over the last year have involved financing for backyard buildings. So a lot of South Africans live in these backyard shacks and struggle to access loans and mortgages to sort of build them into real bricks and mortar houses. And we've been looking at some really cool blockchain-backed, I really don't want to talk about the blockchain, initiatives to sort of make that accessing that capital easier. And what's been really cool is I've had the opportunity to work with some amazing housing NGOs and city planners around Cape Town who are just doing such amazing work, and increasingly seeing how they're engaging people through making games with them as a form of research to understand the nuances of how they need to block the townships, for example. So blocking in the urban planning sense, you know. The way that gaming is so much more than gaming. It's like a way to get information, test ideas.
It's fantastic. Yeah, there's a lot. There's so much that we can do. And imagine the future once we kind of figure ourselves out as well. I mean, we're building the tools now to figure ourselves out. Imagine we get to a point where we understand a bit more about the human race.
Absolutely.
It's a scary time.
I mean, I think in general, like the thing that I love when we're talking about money or when we're talking about tech or anything is understanding our own little tiny human brains and its limitations, right? And understanding that, you know, like God, we make the world in our image, like tiny little terrible gods. So tech is never neutral. Like the tech we make, it reflects ourselves and reflects our ideas about humanity and civilization. And I think there've been really interesting experiments around like, you know, neurotrophics and like hacking our own brains. And I think we're just at the start of that, and it's terrifying and very exciting.
It's very exciting. Would you, given the opportunity, and I know the answer because I've answered this for myself, but would you do a bionic implant that improves some cognitive ability, visual ability, overlays?
Absolutely, definitely. I'm ready. I'm ready. Lauren Bjerkes, who is my favorite writer in the world, launched a collection of short stories recently called Slipping. Everyone should read it. She has this great story in there, sort of riffing on Costas Semenya, but also sort of riffing on like the paraplegic Olympics. And it basically imagines a future in which there's a version of the Olympic Games where all body modification is allowed. Nice. And kind of like how crazy and weird that might be and fascinating.
That sounds incredible. I'm just going to get that book.
Yeah, it's so good.
So on that fantastic note, thank you so much for your time, Sam. I really appreciate it. You've made me a wiser person in dealing with my money.
Thanks for
And having. I'll certainly be having a different conversation with my actual financial advisor about what my money should be doing, because I now have a better understanding. Best of luck with the book. If anybody anybody that listens, definitely go and get the book. You can get online at likeafgrownup.com, right?
That's it, yeah.
Or at most bookstores. And I believe you are quite high up in the ranks these days.
Yeah, I think 2 weeks ago we were fourth, which was very exciting. Jacques is still kicking my ass, but, you know, it's fine.
It's just a different genre. Okay, so if everybody go buy us one of these books,
please,
we will get you to that top spot. Thank you so much for your time, Sam. I really appreciate it. And where can we find you online?
So at Beck Bessinger on Twitter. It's a game to see if you can figure out how to spell my surname.
Yeah, that is a game. Otherwise, you go buy the book and the surname is on the front.
Otherwise, we have a really active Facebook group called the League of Fucking Grownups, which you can find. And it's a place where you can ask other very clever people interesting questions about your money. So you don't have to rely on your financial advisor, and you don't have to rely on the deep dark bowels of Reddit. It's a better place. It's very friendly. Come and ask financial questions there.
That is awesome. I did not know that existed. I will be there. Thank you very much.
Cool.
Thank you so much for tuning in. This is The Best in Tech. We will see you again next week from Richard and Sam. Ciao, ciao.